The following is an excerpt from the Science Podcast. To hear the whole show, visit www.sciencemag.org and click on Science Podcast.
Finally today, David Grimm, online news editor of Science, is here to give us a rundown of some of the recent stories from our daily news site. So first, David, we got a story that may help explain why some sounds can just be downright painful.
Right. Well, Carrie, this story is actually painful to read, not because it's poorly written, but because of what it's about. And it's about fingernails scratching on a chalkboard, and just saying that sort of sends some chills up my spine. But basically, the question in this study is, why is that particular sound so annoying to us? And it's not annoying to everybody, but I think it's a fair bet that it's annoying to most of us. And so researchers actually investigated this. They said, you know, what is it about this sound? What's going on physiologically that makes us have such an adverse reaction to it?
So it sounds like a really fun question to answer. How did they set this up?
Well, fun, I guess, if you like listening to nails on a chalkboard. But so basically what they did was they recruited some subjects and they sort of optimized this sound. They played them a variety of sounds, and they tried to see which sound of fingernails sort of raking against a chalkboard they had the most negative reaction to. And they sort of isolated this sound. And then they sort of played around with the audio file. They tweaked some of the frequency ranges and they modified the recording in other ways. And then they played it back to another group of volunteers. And some of the volunteers, they told them, you're about to hear fingernails on a chalkboard. And to some of the volunteers, they said, you're just going to hear a contemporary musical composition. Mm-hmm. And so the first thing the researchers noticed is that when people were told they were going to hear fingernails on a chalkboard, they had a much more adverse reaction to that. And the way the researchers measured this was not only the people's reporting of, hey, I didn't like that sound, but also the researchers monitored the subject's heart rate, their blood pressure, and the electrical conductivity of their skin. And this is a very classic way to test stress. The changes in the conductivity of the skin can actually be an indicator of how stressed out you are. So when the researchers played this sound, even the people that thought they were listening to classical music and said, well, it's not so bad, we're showing a lot of these changes in electrical conductivity, suggesting that physiologically our bodies just have a really sort of negative reaction to the sound, regardless of whether we know what the sound is coming from.
And that could explain why Igor Stravinsky was rioted when he premiered his Rite of Spring.
Could be.
So when the sound was manipulated, how did that affect these listeners' perceptions?
Well, that was the other interesting thing. The researchers found that if they removed frequencies in the sound in the range of 2,000 to 4,000 hertz, it made the sound a lot easier to listen to. And the interesting thing is that sounds in this frequency range are actually in the same frequency range as human speech. So you wouldn't expect that to be the annoying part of the sound, but that's what the researchers found. And in fact, if the researchers took that out and left the noisy scraping parts of the sound in, the listeners didn't say the sound was any more unpleasant. So there seems to be a few different things going on here with the audio. The other thing is that the researchers found that was really interesting is that the shape of our ear canals could actually be part of the reason these sounds sound so bad to us. The researchers found that the ear canal seems to amplify sounds in this 2,000 to 4,000 hertz frequency range, and therefore it makes these sounds even more painful and abrasive than they would be otherwise. So there's actually an interplay of a lot of things going on here for why we find fingernails on a chalkboard such an annoying sound.
And in our next story, physicists and engineers are beginning to see the light.
Right. Well, Carrie, from the last story, which dealt with frequencies of sound, now we're dealing with wavelengths of light. And as you implied, physicists are seeing the light because they're using light to actually move objects around.
And so this all falls within the field of optomechanics. Can you explain what that means exactly?
Right. Well, basically, optomechanics is sort of like what it sounds like. It's using light to move things around. And that seems like kind of like an unusual concept because we don't think of light as really exerting any force or having any sort of mass that would enable it to push anything around. But in fact, in the field of optomechanics over the past few years, researchers have been able to do this. They've used light to influence the motion of a number of tiny physical objects. And in this new study, they take it to a whole new level. They've used light to actually bend a bridge. Now, when I say bridge, I don't mean anything that you could drive over. This is an extremely tiny bridge. In fact, it's 10 micrometers long, 500 nanometers wide and 110 nanometers thick. Not something that you would even probably notice, but you can see a picture of it on the site. And the setup here is they created the silicon bridge, and this bridge was not suspended over water. It was suspended over a glass chip. And then what the researchers did was they pumped laser light into the bridge at various wavelengths. And what they found is, depending on the wavelength, they could either cause this bridge to bow up or bow down. Think about holding a deck of cards in your hand and squeezing your hand. The cards will either bow up or bow down. And that's exactly what the researchers saw here with this tiny, tiny bridge.
So in essence, they were creating sort of a binary switch.
Exactly.
Up
and
or down.
Exactly. And that's what's kind of cool about this, because researchers have been talking for a while about another field, which is known as optical computing. And the idea is that today's computers are all electron-based, but researchers would like to move into optical computers, which would mean that light was basically flipping all the little tiny quote-unquote switches in your computer, going from 1 to 0, which is the whole binary code that all computers deal with. And the idea would be here that they've actually found a way to do that. They found a way to use light to be able to physically flip something from one configuration into another.
And lastly, Dave, what's the deal with laundry lint?
Well, Carrie, when we think of laundry lint, or at least when I think of laundry lint, I usually think about dryer lint, cleaning out that sort of crud that accumulates in the lint bin of the dryer. But this is about lint that actually accumulates in the washer. This is lint that we never see. And what I'm talking about here is these tiny fibers of polyester that come out of our clothing and they get washed away as the water leaves the washing machine and get dumped out into the ocean. Now, for a while, researchers have been wondering, A, whether this even happens, and B, what impact that might be having on marine life. And that's what this new study is all about.
So these fibers would be extremely tiny. How on earth can we figure out their impact on something so large as the ocean?
Well, it's a great question, and it took a lot of work. What these researchers basically did was they flew to beaches on 6 continents, and they scooped sand from 18 beaches in total. Then, back in the lab, they painstakingly separated the plastic from the sand, a process that literally involved hand plucking these little microscopic fibers out of the sand. Doesn't sound like a lot of fun, and it took them a long time to do it. But when they did it and they took these fibers out, they did a chemical analysis on the fibers, and the analysis showed that nearly 80% of these fibers were made of polyester or acrylic, which are compounds that are commonly found in the textiles that we wear. Not a single beach that these researchers looked at was free of this washer lint. And each cup of sand that they scooped up contained at least 2 of these fibers and as many as 31.
So how are these fibers getting there?
Well, what the researchers think is happening is, and they also tested this by looking at wastewater and ocean sediments, and basically what they were able to do was to essentially trace the fibers back to washing machines. And to confirm this, they actually went out and bought a bunch of polyester blankets, fleeces, and shirts, and commandeered the washing machines of 3 volunteers and actually washed these garments for several months. They collected the wastewater from the washing machines and filtered it. And lo and behold, they were recovering the same types of microfibers that they were seeing on these beaches all around the world. So they're pretty confident that this stuff is actually coming from our washing machines and not some other source.
And so it gets from the washing machine to the beaches through the sewer systems.
Exactly. And so the next question is, what impact is it having on marine life? And that's actually a question the researchers weren't able to answer in the study. What they do know is that these fibers can absorb pollutants like DDT. They can also end up in fish and other marine organisms, which means that they go from the washing machine to the ocean back to our dinner plate. But the big question remains, are they really dangerous? And that's going to have to be the topic for future research. Now we know that they're getting out there. The question is, are they having an impact on marine life or even us?
Okay, and what other news stories have we had in the last week?
Well, Carrie, on Science Now, we've got a story on dinosaur migration. Also a story about the oldest case of prostate cancer in ancient Egypt. This comes from some pretty detailed analysis of an Egyptian mummy. For Science Insider, our policy blog, we've got a story about an XPRIZE being offered for the first group to sequence a human genome for $1,000. Also, a story about the public's thoughts on geoengineering. This is an emerging science which seeks to reverse the effects of climate change with man-made solutions. Finally, for Science Live, our weekly chat on the hottest topics in science, this week's Science Live is about the intersection of art, humor, and science, how scientists can best express their creative side, and whether there's room for art and humor in scientific research. So be sure to check out all of these stories on the site.
And this is hot on the heels of the Dance Your PhD contest.
Exactly, exactly.
Well, thanks, Dave. David Grimm is the online news editor of Science. You can check out the latest science news on the policy blog, Science Insider, at news.sciencemag.org, where you can also join a live chat, Science Live, on the hottest science topics every Thursday at 3 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time.